Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Jonathan DeBurka Butler is here once again to bring us stories from other parts of the world. Jonathan, good afternoon.
Sean, how are you getting on?
China we're going to first, and an ivory ban has come into effect there.
Yeah, this was a ban that was announced early enough last year and was brought partially into effect in 2017, but came into full effect at the beginning of the year. And it's basically the state media service has said that from today, and that was early January, the buying and selling of elephant ivory and goods by any market shop or vendor is against the law. And that's also going to apply to souvenirs that are purchased abroad and online sales, those kind of things. So they used to have a situation in China where state-run factories had ivory. Okay, so they sort of rubber stamp it and say, okay, you're okay to buy from these factories, and these are and these are all okay. But obviously there was a very large black market, and there still is. And so while this has been welcomed by campaigners, naturally enough, there is concern around this legislation. Is it going to stop the trade, or is it in fact going to maybe increase it for a while? So it's one of those laws that are being brought in very publicly to kind of change the culture within China. The government are being seen to do something, but will it actually take effect on the ground, given that an awful lot of the trade is done on the black market?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, but it does seem to be the case that a lot of the ivory trade, whether it was illegal or illegal, and I'm putting that in inverted commas, was driven by demand from China.
Yeah, and that's it. And once the demand is there, as we know, people are going to buy, and there's always going to be people who are willing to supply it. I suppose the good thing in a strange way was that at least there was some sort of government regulation before, and now those government regulated factories have shut down. But I suppose you have to do that first in order to let the culture gradually
change.
Feed into people and change, you know. So that's where they're going. The few reasons why they're doing it, we know that Xi Jinping there's a big anti-corruption drive in the country at the moment, and apparently authorities were getting paid with ivory. So that's part of it as well. Also, wants to create good relations with governments in Africa, which is very much a market that Chinese traders are focusing on for the next, you know, 20, 50 years.
It's interesting in a wider context of the sense that we're perhaps, if the United States is withdrawing from international, you know, relations with countries, that China seems to be gradually expanding that.
Yeah,
now, it's trade related, as you say, but, you know, this kind of soft power being wielded as well.
Yeah, and there's one big thing is this new corridor that's been opened from China down to Pakistan, which will take them into the Arabian Sea and give them a far cleaner and more direct line to Africa, where they're investing heavily. So it's a huge change, really.
Yeah. Well, if there's any government that can force change in the attitudes of its citizens, it would be the Chinese government, one would think. Right, we are going to the aforementioned United States, and this is a story about an ex-sheriff facing trial.
Yeah, this is an ex-sheriff, David Clark. He's known as a supporter of Donald Trump. They are similarly boorish and slightly moronic, to be honest with you. And I suppose this is an example of that. David Clark was on a plane from Dallas. He was coming back to Milwaukee. This was early last year. He was sitting on the plane and he was recognised by another passenger, a man by the name of Dan Black. Now, according to reports, the only thing that Dan Black did was he recognised Sheriff Clark, or former Sheriff Clark, and nodded his head and tut-tutted. And when he got to the airport in Milwaukee, he was met by six policemen and two police dogs, and he was detained. Now, apparently this was done because Sheriff Clark had taken umbrage at this so-called insult. So Mr. Black retaliated by bringing a case against Sheriff Clark, okay? And so there was a few different things that he was looking at. One was a violation of his constitutional right to free speech for shaking his head and tut-tutting. The other one was that he felt that he his right against an unreasonable seizure had been breached. Now, the judge has thrown out an awful lot of these cases, okay, or these particular charges, but he's upheld one, and that is that Clark when these charges were first brought against him, or these accusations were first brought against him, posted a few things on his Facebook page. Now, I'll give you an example if I can. So he said, "Sheriff, if Sheriff Clark were really to harass you, you wouldn't be around to whine about it." And this was posted with a picture of Mr. Black, the man who had so offended him. He said, "Anyone else who pulls this stunt on a plane, the next time they may get knocked out." So obviously Mr. Black felt that this was a threat, and this is the part of the accusations or the charges that the judge is bringing forward to a case, and he says that it's triable.
Yeah. All the police who were waiting for Dan Black when he got off the plane and the police dogs, what was the basis of that? What did they suspect he had done? Well, have they given a reason for what they suspect?
As far as I know, they haven't. That it was just basically there to harass Mr. Black when he arrived at the airport. That Mr. Clark had either phoned ahead, or there might have been agents on the plane with him, or got in touch ahead, or in some fashion. And they were just doing it to essentially harass him. And that's what Mr. Black was arguing.
Right. And when he arrived at the airport, was he arrested by these people?
He was seized. He wasn't arrested. He was taken for questioning. And that was the thing that the judge actually said. Look, he said, okay, it might have been a bit over the top, but it wasn't unreasonable.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so he was stopped for questioning, but he wasn't detained as such.
Presumably there should be some reason to stop somebody for questioning rather than just do it randomly. Mm. Argentina we're going to go to next. And this is a story about 190 civil servants who have been caught. Caught doing what?
Nothing, effectively. That's the problem.
Rather like the previous chap we were talking about.
At the end of last year, about 2 months ago, a new system was brought in by the Argentinian Congress where employees had to turn up to work. And there was a sort of a new biometric system being put in place with fingerprinting. Okay, and if you didn't turn up, you didn't get paid. Now, what this turned out was that an awful lot of people weren't actually turning up for work. 190 people have been caught already, and most of them have been absent for over 10 days in a row without any explanation. So these guys are now being termed as gnocchi. So gnocchi is that Italian dish, right, which traditionally you eat on the 29th. It's the same in Argentina. So these gnocchi would only turn up on the 29th to collect their paycheck and then go off. But they've been caught, an awful lot of them now. 30 of them have resigned, 160 are under investigation, and it's a pretty good result for the first 2 months.
But I assume they had no way of monitoring whether people turned up for work or not prior to this.
They mustn't have, and perhaps their bosses might have been complicit. I mean, it is all part of sort of reduction measures that have been brought in by the relatively new Prime Minister, Maurizio Macri. Mm. He's been around, about 18 months now, I suppose. But anyway, there's an awful lot of stuff that's causing problems for some people. So he's reducing pensions, he's taking away utility subsidies, those kind of things, and just job cuts. And he's also making sure people are turning up for work as well. So,
the last one's kind of reasonable, I would have thought.
It is indeed.
Right, Senegal, and 13 people have been killed there in an attack.
Yes, and this is, again, it's a separatist situation. We seem to talk an awful lot about, you know, these sort of small separatist movements that happen in Africa, and they sort of appear out of the blue. But this is down in the south of the country, in the south of Senegal. It's in an area called Casamance. Why is it happening? It's been happening since the 1980s. It's an ethnic as well as a religious driven thing, I suppose. The general population of this particular region, they felt they're basically being ignored by Dakar. Mm. Okay, and they might be within their rights to feel that as well. And since the 1980s, they have taken up arms against the government, albeit at a low level. Now, it had died down to quite an extent in 2014 when a peace agreement, or at least a sort of ceasefire, was agreed to. But there are now rumblings in the region that these separatist rebels are back in action. And although we're not sure yet, the indicators are that they have acted as of Saturday. Mm. And that's a worrying trend.
And is it known that the people who were killed, whether they were members of the military or police or civilians?
This is the thing. It's they were civilians. These were people who were out collecting wood in a forest. We believe there was about 30 or 40 of them. Gunmen came, attacked them, opened fire. 7 of them are injured, 13 are dead. And we know that the Senegalese army have deployed an extra about 200 troops into the area to, I suppose, first of all, find out exactly what happened and then to make sure that the things are kept a lid on. Because you've got to remember there's also going to be the old ethnic divisions are going to be thrown in there as well.
Yes, of course. Yeah. And those divisions, apart from the ethnic division, what's the religious division there?
So most of Senegal is mainly Muslim, but in this particular part of the world, there's sort of a mixture of Christian and animist elements here. There's also a geographical thing in that this particular part of Senegal is sort of detached from the main part of Senegal by Gambia. So you know the way Gambia is this very narrow little country that sort of juts into the middle of Senegal? Well, this province is right underneath it.
Okay.
So you have to go around all the way to the east. So it's that...
It's the Gaza Strip
of
Senegal,
that kind of thing.
In a way. Yes.
It's, you know, it's the usual thing. They're miles away from the capital, so we'll take all their resources and we'll make money out of them, but we won't give them anything back.
Right. Okay.
That kind of thing.
Well, that probably also partially explains why so little information has come to light yet about these particular killings. Right. Egypt, we're going to next. And a female singer has been arrested for her video.
Yes, I sent a tweet out of this video, and you can decide for yourself if the charges of violating public decency and inciting debauchery are stand up against her. In my opinion, they probably don't. She's doing a little bit of dancing. This is Leila Amer, and she released a song called Baz O'Mac, which translates as "Look at Your Mother." Now, it's a kind of
odd title.
Well, it is, and it's kind of a pun on a popular Arabic profanity.
Right.
I suppose the Arabic of I won't finish that, but anyway,
okay.
So anyway, she was arrested on Wednesday for dancing in this video. The case was brought against her by one of these stupid do-gooder lawyers who go around looking for trouble, basically, to bring against women. And he filed a complaint for destroying the morality and disseminating vice within the country. And it's indicative of what's going on in Egypt over the last couple of years. I was only talking to somebody who's half Irish, half Egyptian the other day. She's a woman. And she hasn't been there for 3 years because she says, to visit her relations, because she says that it's just too dangerous and because this kind of thing is happening on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. So the country as a whole is swinging back in a far more conservative
becoming
direction.
Becoming very, very conservative. And this woman could face up to 2 years in prison for this. And
Crikey.
It's nothing. Like, it's a joke.
Yeah. And there's been a lot of arrests similar to this on what's perceived to be morality issues.
Yes, absolutely. There was another singer, lady by the name of Shima, I think it was. She was also sentenced to 2 years in prison. Now, that was reduced to 1 year on appeal.
Yeah.
Outrageous stuff.
Yeah, Greece we're going to go to next. And this is about their long-running dispute in Macedonia. They hope to resolve it.
They do. They say they want to resolve it by the end of this year. It's a very long, complicated story, so I'm not going to go into all of it. Mm-hmm. But effectively, there is a part of Greece which is called Macedonia, and it borders the country that we know as Macedonia. And the Greeks basically believe that it is threatening to their region of Macedonia. They say that it sort of lends itself to the idea that Macedonia have territorial claims to that, which they've never really said they had. And as a result, Athens for years has blocked Macedonia's bids to join international organisations, including the European Union and NATO. And that has been a major problem for them, as you can imagine. So this year, they said that, you know, their New Year's resolution, shall we say, and this has been brought forward by the Greeks as well, it should be said, that they want to resolve the issue. Now, how they're going to do it, we have no explanation around that, but hopefully they'll come up with some sort of a solution.
Yeah, but if their argument is that the name of the country implies a territorial claim over part of Greece, they're... Macedonia, the country, isn't going to change their name.
No. I think the Greeks refer to it as something like the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia.
Yeah.
And the Macedonians want them to drop all of that and just call it Macedonia. So they've probably come up with some sort of fudge around it.
Yeah. Well, hopefully they do. A story involving Switzerland and Sri Lanka and financiers and the kind of rather opaque financial system in Switzerland.
Yeah, financiers, not the nice cakes, but people giving money to the Tamil Tigers in this case. This is 13 people who were giving money to the Tamil Tigers between 1999 and 2009. when that whole conflict ended in quite controversial and very swift fashion. These are citizens, at least, of Switzerland, Germany and Sri Lanka who are being brought to trial here. They had managed to get funds in the region of $15 million together. Now, the Swiss, never had an issue as such with the actual funding of the Tamils as a terrorist organisation, because the Swiss never recognised them as a terrorist organisation, okay, if that makes sense.
So they technically weren't breaking a law.
Yeah, so that's not the charge. It's how they got that money. And it was basically through extortion, through the creation of fake documents, the creation of fake companies. And more than anything, was sort of influencing Tamils within Switzerland to get loans that they were never going to be able to pay back. Banks.
Yeah.
So it was that kind of thing. And that's what they're being accused of here. So the trial is actually underway at the moment, and we'll see how it pans out. But it's been quite extensive. It's been going since 2009. So you imagine the body of evidence to get through is huge here.
Yeah. And complicated, no doubt.
Finally,
Tahiti we're going to next, where the police auctioned off a boat with a surprise ingredient. So
they did. This was a yacht that was seized last January, apparently, because it was carrying 800 kilograms of cocaine off Tahiti. Now, they took the boat and obviously they thought they had got rid of the cocaine.
Mm.
But the fellow who bought it at the police auction, while he was cleaning it out, he found more. Which could have been a major problem for him as he goes sailing into Indonesia or somewhere else like that. So thankfully he found it and he managed to give it back to the police, and it was destroyed along with the rest of the drugs that were found in Tahiti, which are mainly on their way to Australia and New Zealand. So it's interesting, quite a bit of trafficking goes through there.
Yeah, though it sounds like the Tahiti police need a bit more training, or the Coast Guard need a bit more training in searching boats. Right, so what should we look out for this coming week, Jonathan?
Okay, so there's a few things. In Palm Springs, if we look at the cultural events, the 29th annual Palm Springs International Film Festival is on. That goes until the 15th of January. Then on Wednesday, Norwegian Prime Minister Erna Solberg has the pleasure of visiting Donald Trump in the White House. That should be quite interesting. And then a presidential election in the Czech Republic, which the European Union, given what's going on with Hungary and Poland, they'll be watching with great interest.
Yeah. Are there any early indications as to how that might go?
I think the fellow who's in place at the moment is going to win. But I was reading that they're actually quite worried about Russian interference on this, given Russian interference in other presidential elections. So we'll see how it pans out.
And given their proximity to the old Soviet Union and the fact that those three countries are bristling against the European Union at the moment. That's, very interesting indeed. Jonathan, thanks a million for coming in with us. Jonathan de Burka-Butler there. Back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.